Peter B. Collins News and Comment, Friday, February 15th, 2013.
Time to die. Time to die.
Back in 2009, during the healthcare debate in the Congress, progressive Democrat from Florida, Alan Grayson, famously said that the Republican plan, which was non-existent, was don't get sick, and if you do, die quickly. In an exclusive interview with PeterBCollins.com, Congressman Grayson returns today to talk about H.R. 500. It's called Medicare You Can Buy Into Act, and here he describes the simple terms of his proposal. It's only a four-page bill, and what it cost him when he introduced this in his previous term. He was elected in 2008, he was defeated in 2010, and reelected in 2012. And he explains who came out against him and caused him to lose in 2010. Here's an excerpt from my conversation with Congressman Alan Grayson.
If you want Medicare and you're willing to pay for it, then it's yours. And because that's a very simple concept, this bill, unlike the Affordable Care Act, is four pages long. It creates a small group of age groups, and it says that for each age group there's going to be a price. And we've actually priced it out with the help of the Congressional Budget Office. Medicare actually would cost individuals in their early 60s, just before they would qualify for Medicare at the government's expense, it would cost them about $450 a month, actually much less than many people are paying right now for private insurance. For young people, for people under the age of 18, it would cost $100 a month, barely $100 a month. And for people in between, it would cost something in between. But it's just as simple as you can imagine. You're part of an age group. You pay enough so that the cost of that age group are covered, and it's available to any legal resident of the United States.
And so have the insurance companies called to let you know that they'll take you out at the next election, Congressman?
Well, actually, that's already happened. They did take me out in the 2010 election. We introduced this bill. We got 83 co-sponsors for this bill, other members of Congress, in 2 weeks. And we invited the public to be citizen co-sponsors and got tens of thousands of people as citizen co-sponsors of their bill. The leadership told me privately that this is the next big thing that's going to happen in health care reform, and it was gathering a lot of steam. What happened was that I was conceived as so threatening to the status quo because of the simple idea that I was introducing and pushing, so threatening that the health insurance companies spent $2 million to defeat me in the 2010 election, but I won big in the 2012 election, and now I'm back and pushing it all over again.
My full conversation with Congressman Grayson is available today for subscribers at PeterBCollins.com. And I hope you'll take out a subscription if you don't already have one and listen to the full interview. And in our conversation, we talk about the failure of the Obama team to enable any debate about single payer back in 2009-2010. And that expanding the ranks of Medicare is not only good for consumers, but it has the greatest probability of keeping costs from escalating as quickly as they have in the last 10 years. Nobody really talks anymore about cutting costs, but if large numbers of people moved from the private for-profit healthcare sector into Medicare, it would really make a difference in holding down cost increases in health insurance and the underlying care that it covers. And so this is a very simple and powerful bill, and it'll be very interesting to see if it gets traction in the current Congress. It's something I fully support. We also talk with Congressman Grayson about the president's proposed minimum wage increase to $9 an hour nationwide, about his aspiration for preschool for all, and also about his relatively weak hand related to climate change. He's talking about it again, and that's a good thing, but he isn't offering a very specific set of proposals. And, of course, we'll discuss with Congressman Grayson that in the Republican-controlled House, it's very difficult to get any climate change legislation passed. Also on Capitol Hill, the battle is underway to delay, belay, or cancel the automatic spending cuts, the so-called sequester, now set to take effect March 1. Now, I think most likely they will kick the can down the road. They'll punt once again and delay this for a couple of more months. But Democrats have put forward a novel proposal, which includes more taxes for the rich. In order to raise the $85 billion a year to cancel the sequester, they talk about raising $54 billion over 10 years, or $5 billion a year, by establishing a 30% minimum tax on incomes over $1 million. And it would also tax tar sands oil to pay for oil spill cleanups and end a business tax deduction for the cost of moving equipment overseas. Those are all good ideas. And the rest of it would come from $27.5 billion in defense cuts, but they're pushed out to 2015 and as far down as 2021, and another $27.5 billion in farm subsidy cuts. So these are interesting proposals that don't cut into programs that I consider to be sensitive and don't give the Defense Department a complete pass on budget cuts at this point. So it'll be interesting to see if that proposal can get through the Senate. And, of course, the House is the place where it'll be most difficult. Yesterday, Senate Leader Harry Reid forced a vote on the nomination of Chuck Hagel to be the next defense secretary and came up about three votes short. That's because Republicans in filibuster mode demanded 60 votes to end debate on the Hagel nomination. And curiously, some Republicans who say that they won't actually join a full-fledged filibuster after next week's President's holiday break say that after that they'll vote for Hagel. They claim that some of their colleagues need more time to, I don't know, leaf through his financial records, look at YouTube for incriminating speeches that might be critical of Israel or things like that. But it is a setback for the White House, and as I pointed out yesterday, it just shows what a failure Harry Reid's deal to put limits on the filibuster really will have, and that you cannot make a deal with Republicans on a gentlemanly basis. And when will Harry Reid get the real message that Republicans in the Senate don't act, at least as a group, as gentlemen and gentle ladies? And you got to play hardball, Harry. There's just no question about it. Now, earlier this week, I mentioned that some of the Republican senators who've threatened to put a hold on the Hagel and the John Brennan CIA nomination are doing the right thing for the wrong reasons. And now Senator Rand Paul is doing the right thing for the right reasons. He's threatening to put a hold on the Brennan nomination, saying he wants more information on the drone program and the targeted killing program, including the assassination of American citizens in other countries. And on that, I can join Rand Paul, and I have to say that putting that hold is the very right reason, because we really need to hold John Brennan accountable and not just rubber stamp his move back to the CIA, where he spent 25 years, after serving as the drone meister and official sniper at the White House for the last 4 years. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But like Chuck Hagel, at least another week will pass this break next week for the President's Day holiday before any possible action can take place in the Senate. We'll continue in a moment with other news, but take a minute here to listen to one of my longtime loyal listeners and a subscriber, Andy Drawl, a transplant who used to work on Wall Street and is now here in California.
Hi, my name is Andy Drawl. I'm from Redwood City, California. As Peter would say, Deadwood. And not Wild Bill's Old West lively Deadwood, South Dakota, either. I subscribe to the Peter B. Collins podcast because news items are covered here, not covered by the corporate media. There's so many areas Peter covers, it's hard to determine where to begin. But I'll emphasize 3 points. Number one, If you want the skivvy on a variety of important topics, civil liberties, Gitmo, NDAA, the prison industrial complex, climate change, the wealth disparity, the demise of the middle class, Wall Street fraud, etc., you'll get it here. You'll get news people, reporters, freelancers, authors, attorneys, and activists from around the globe not given the airtime they rightly deserve by the corporate media, so we can be informed. Number two, you don't hear from the mealy-mouthed or corporate hack politicians on this podcast. They're scared they'll be exposed. Peter will speak truth to power. No sugarcoating here. The politicians with something to hide will not be on this show. Number three, no NPR fluff here, or gratuitous sycophantic fawning quid pro quo you get from other talk show hosts. I'm talking about the big media regions from L.A., New York, Washington. No free passes on this show with this talk show host. As Peter says, there's no truth in Pravda and no news in Izvestia. But you will get the truth and news on this podcast. Again, this is Andy from Redwood City, Deadwood. Please join me and others to support independent media. If you can't afford it, sign up for a subscription today. Thank you.
Thanks, Andy. I appreciate your support and your description of the work that we do here. I do consider it unique and special, and I hope you find it worth supporting. In case you don't know, you can get a 24-hour pass to my website for $1. It's $5 a month, $50 a year. And I'd like to set a goal for 5 people to take out new subscriptions between now and next Monday. You got Monday off. Many people do for a federal holiday. So if you find yourself with a little extra time, I hope you'll go to peterbcollins.com. The links to take out a subscription are under my picture on the homepage. And once again, that's peterbcollins.com. Here in California, it was quite a week as the manhunt reportedly tracked down rogue former L.A. cop Chris Dorner, and he ended up dying in a burning cabin in San Bernardino County. And he, well, it's a complicated story, there's no doubt about it. But the manifesto he published raises real issues about corruption in the Los Angeles Police Department and the protection of officers who commit brutal acts against unarmed suspects. That said, there is no justification for the carnage that is laid at the feet of Chris Dorner, and there's also no excuse for the way this whole thing ended. Now, yes, he was an armed man. He had killed law enforcement officers, and he was, considered armed and dangerous. And I give credit to corporate media outlets that went wall-to-wall in this coverage in order to jack up their ratings. But they didn't just take it face value. The reports from reporter Max Blumenthal and others that they intentionally used an incendiary form of tear gas to make this cabin catch fire and to burn this man alive. There can be no justification for tactics like that. And so I'm going to, at least unless there are some other big developments, I'll probably lay this story to rest here in my corner. But I am pleased to see that aggressive reporting from independents who are using Twitter and non-corporate independent media to raise important questions about these tactics actually filtered through to the corporate media. More legal wrangling at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, over the policies and the practices for the trial, the kangaroo court trial of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and 4 others accused of masterminding the attacks of 9/11. And in an interesting turnabout, one of the defense attorneys was able to put his boss and a much higher-ranking official, Vice Admiral Bruce McDonald, on the stand and ask questions. Now, some of the issues that have been raised are, do the attorneys for the defendants at Guantanamo have the right to talk with them privately without being monitored? And we've learned that the FBI installed secret eavesdropping microphones in the rooms where attorneys were meeting with these clients. And we're told, yes, the microphones were there, but they weren't turned on. You believe that one? And the head of the convening authority, this is Vice Admiral McDonald, testified via video about his handling of the 9/11 case. Defense lawyers contend that his decision to approve capital charges in the case was flawed, and he began calmly in his testimony saying that he was among a group of uniformed lawyers who were disgusted by the Bush administration's original military commission rules and had fought to revamp the system. But under questioning by Commander Walter Ruiz of the Navy, his subordinate, about why he had gone forward with the charges despite obstacles that the defense contends have crippled their ability to be effective advocates, like restrictions on their communications with clients and delays getting security clearances for translators and consultants, McDonald seemed to brush off these criticisms. And so that's what we know about what has been going on at Guantanamo this week. In the United States Senate, there was an important hearing, one of the early hearings about immigration reform. And I want to single out two people who I consider to be heroes, because they're undocumented residents of the United States who could be deported at almost any time. One is Jose Antonio Vargas, and he's developed somewhat of a profile. He worked here at the San Francisco Chronicle, then was hired as a reporter at the Washington Post before he disclosed that he was not a citizen. And I think he may have doctored his resume in other respects as well. But he went forward without a mask, without an assumed name, and he testified before this committee. Quote, too often we're treated as abstractions, faceless and nameless, visibly invisible, mere subjects of debate rather than as individuals with families, hopes, fears, and dreams. And, of course, it didn't take long for Neanderthal Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama to inject the amnesty word and take what could have been a rational debate right off track. And similarly, Terrence Park is a student at the University of California at Berkeley, and he is a math major, and he has gone public testifying about the DREAM Act. And I just want to single him out because I hope that by mentioning him, it will heighten his profile and he will not be deported as retaliation for standing up and fighting for the rights of residents who don't have documents. Yes, they're called illegal aliens by those who don't like them. And I wanted to add just a kind of gratuitous comment to all of the debate about gun violence in this country. It's happening in the Congress, it's happening in state legislatures, and overall, I think it's a good thing. But we know that they're going to nibble around the edges. And the Democrats, either intentionally or not, by trying to pass background checks, an end to the gun show loophole, and other restrictions on gun owners, have embraced what I think is a phony concept of the Second Amendment. I don't believe that the Second Amendment confers the right of individuals to keep and bear arms. I think it's clearly related to militias. But in order to try to mollify the extreme right in this country, and many in the center, Democrats dutifully say, oh yes, we're not going to take away your guns. The Second Amendment clearly gives you that right. I don't think it is clear. The other thing that is completely absent from this debate is the role of the so-called war on drugs, or the war on some drugs, in adding to gun violence in this country. Many of the people who have unregistered or stolen handguns, people who buy their guns on the street, are somehow connected to the illegal drug trade. And as long as drugs remain illegal, we will have large numbers of illegal weapons on our streets and in the hands of people who will never get a background check, register those guns, pay insurance on them if that becomes a requirement. And so once again, we are talking around issues without ever looking at the underlying causes. And as I've pointed out, most of the efforts about gun regulation that are being discussed right now are aimed at preventing suburban white kids from being murdered. And that's not a bad thing in and of itself. But when you look at the murder rate in Chicago, what was it, 500 last year? And you look at the murder rate in Oakland and in Los Angeles, these are not assault weapons being sprayed across innocent white suburban kids. They are lethal weapons wielded by young black men, and most often, the victims are likewise young black men. Well, right now, the world markets are awash in cash. Some $5 to $6 trillion has been pumped into economies by central banks in the last year to 18 months. But consumers' banks aren't lending, not to any greater degree than they were. And corporations with large amounts of cash are not using it to hire people, reduce unemployment, and expand their own markets. And so just this week, we see a wave of mergers and acquisitions. American Airlines and U.S. Airways are merging. Who's going to lose? Consumers who fly their routes will ultimately pay higher prices and get less service. And some people in feeder markets will lose the service that gets them from their local airport to a regional hub. And where is the Justice Department? Maybe they'll investigate this proposed merger, but they are largely absent. Anheuser-Busch was bought by InBev, and it's trying to take over the company that makes Corona, Grupo Modelo. And here it does appear the Justice Department is finally getting involved. What, do we have to wait until we get down to two or three beer brands before they decide that somebody has too much control of that market? Now, candidly, I'm not a beer drinker, and so I'm not really affected by that. But you can see the concentration of control that the new parent company of Anheuser-Busch has. And that's not good for any industry, and least of all, the workers in that kind of industry. And we see that Berkshire Hathaway, that's Warren Buffett's company, is joining forces with one of Brazil's wealthiest financiers, a company called 3G Capital, to take over the Heinz Ketchup Company for $23 billion. Now, I don't know what else besides Heinz Ketchup and barbecue sauce is included in the deal, but how can they extract $23 billion worth of value and have that company survive? These bigger is better kinds of mergers generally prove out to be opportunities for vulture capitalists like Mitt Romney and Bain Capital to come in, load them up with debt, raid the pension funds, offshore manufacturing, and then when the company fails, they take the money and run. And finally today, we have another wave of spending going on in this country driven by the Department of Homeland Security and the excessive fear of terrorist attacks in this country. In my own peaceful, placid county of Marin, just north of San Francisco, local officials have accepted a grant from Homeland Security that pays for about 85% of an armored vehicle that costs $370,000. It is supposed to be the response vehicle when somebody has a dirty nuclear bomb or biological or chemical weapons. There's no history of any kind of threat like that in our county or in neighboring counties. They say, well, this is a regional asset. We'll be able to share it with other counties that need it. And likewise, we see local law enforcement officials angling to get the drones that they see the military and intelligence communities using today. And across the bay from me in Alameda County, it appears that activists have at least delayed for now a proposal by the sheriff to purchase a 4.5-pound drone. It's got a video camera on it, doesn't have any missiles. But the sheriff says, well, you know, we want to use it only in mission-specific situations, like looking for a missing child, or giving deputies an aerial view of a crime scene like a school shooting, or looking for a fugitive in remote terrain. They can already do that with helicopters and airplanes. But with the grant from the federal government, the idea of these high-tech drones seems irresistible to many law enforcement agencies. And I applaud the efforts of many activists, some from Occupy and from other groups like the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, who went to a public hearing on Valentine's Day. And at least for now, it seems like the proposal by the Alameda County Sheriff to acquire a drone has been put on hold. But at Fresno State University, they've applied for a drone permit, and the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, is prepared to set up 6 zones in California where drones would be permitted. We got to keep an eye on this one, because Big Brother is planning to keep a lot of eyes on us. Thanks for joining me for news and comment. Check out all my podcasts at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until